Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Welcome to a special edition of JS on Politics, where we're taking a look at the debate last night in Cleveland, where there was thousands of people at Quicken Loans Arena, and that was just on stage. We'll start with a taped bit from earlier this morning with Craig Gilbert, who was in Cleveland covering the debate for us. We're joined now by Craig Gilbert, our Washington bureau chief, who was covering the debate last night in Cleveland. So first, good morning, Craig. Last night, the format, we talked in our preview show about how it's just a different dynamic with 10 candidates on the stage. They sort of had these, you know, inconsistent questions to each and really pointed in many ways. What was your take on the format and how it affected the outcome?
Well, I mean, with 10 candidates on the stage, there were sort of one of two ways this could have gone. One was for it to make for a very stilted debate where there was no flow, and the other was what we got last night, which was more like a kind of a free-for-all and a carnival and a very entertaining and colorful debate. It did, you know, when you have 10 candidates, it really mattered who got what questions, and the panelists played a huge role in this. Introduces some kind of inequities in the debate because the candidates have no control over which questions they get. But, you know, they have to step up to the plate. And I think in some cases, some candidates kind of receded into the background, either because they wouldn't get questions for long periods of time. In the case of Governor Walker, I think in some cases his answers were so abbreviated that he didn't have as much airtime, particularly early in the debate, as he might have liked. And he had to field some tough questions, which I think he did reasonably well, but they were questions, they weren't always subjects that he wanted to talk about.
Yeah, well, what's one thing that struck me is when you're in a more conventional format, you half the time at least you know the question that's coming because it's been asked of your opponent, and here it was a little more think on your feet. I mean, how for Walker overall, how would you grade his performance?
I think he did okay. I think it was sort of as advertised. I think he played it pretty safe. I think he signaled pretty clearly that he wasn't going to get into the trenches with the other Republican candidates, and he didn't. It was important to him to kind of keep to that kind of genial demeanor that we see from him on the campaign trail. He's trying to project a certain tone. The downside of that was that he didn't have a high-profile debate. He had some good moments, but he was not a huge presence on that debate stage. He didn't necessarily need to be because he's in better shape in this race than a lot of other people who were on that stage who really needed to force themselves into the action. A few of them did that. So I would say he, at a minimum, he did himself no harm. It was a debate that was kind of consistent with the way he's run his campaign. Maybe a little bit of a lost opportunity in the sense that he probably could have gotten a little bit more out of the debate than he did.
What was the assessment of his campaign team afterwards, and were they pleased with how it went, or
they called the spin room for a reason, and they they told us and they told me that they thought it was a good debate, that they thought he did what he needed to do. What they were saying after the debate was consistent with what they were saying before the debate, which is the kind of debate he wanted to have, his strategy going in. He wasn't going to worry about what everybody else on the stage was doing. He was going to try to project a message. I think it did take him a while to kind of get to the core of his message, the whole message about fighting and winning all these battles in Wisconsin, which is sort of the uniqueness of his appeal to Republican primary voters. We didn't really hear that until his closing remarks, which is the one part of the debate where you do have some control, absolute control, over what you're going to say.
All right. Now, looking forward, the governor, of course, is an experienced politician. He'll adapt and adjust to these formats as he gets more comfortable with them. But what do you think he will be looking to do or needs to adapt to, you know, for the next go-round in about a month?
Well, I think the big thing is just to get the most out of his answers. You know, I looked up at the 30-minute mark, and he'd had basically 40 seconds of talking time. And he ended up with less time than all but one of the other Republicans on stage. It's not a huge deal, but again, I think you want to get the most out of these opportunities. And he was so kind of economical in some of his answers that he left time on the table. And I think you even saw him get better as the debate went on and getting the most out of his time.
All right. And lastly, best moment and worst moment in your mind for the governor last night?
I don't know if there's a worse moment. I do think, you know, again, the criticism is that in some cases his answers were abbreviated and they didn't register. I think his best moment was the one-liner about, you know, the Russian and Chinese hacking and how at this point the Russian and Chinese governments probably know more about Hillary Clinton's email server than members of Congress do. That got a big laugh out of the audience. It was obviously a prepared line, but I think it was kind of a high moment for him among Republican primary voters.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us. And to our viewers, check out jsonline.com for Craig's analysis of the debate last night, and also watch for his coverage today of Governor Walker as a campaign stop in Ohio. Thank you, Craig.
You're welcome.
All right, we're back live now with guests Mary Spicuzza, Daniel Bice, and Patrick Marley's in Madison to, you know, kind of go over the debate a little bit. I'm going to start with Dan because you were on our preview show yesterday, and you said it would be a victory for Scott Walker in the debate if he didn't make a headline. So did he take his advice a little too seriously, or what was your sense of how he did?
My sense? Well, first of all, it's you listen to what I said yesterday.
Of course.
My impression was that they were very concerned that he would make a bad impression or make a mistake, and as a result, they ended up leaving almost no impression. He disappeared for large parts of the debate, and I think he came off of the 10 as the most overly scripted of the candidates.
All right, we're going to show on the screen now a couple measures of that, you know, sort of fading into the background of how much time everyone had on the screen. So on the list here, Scott Walker came in 9th out of the 10 ahead of only Rand Paul. And so Scott Walker had about 5 minutes, 43 seconds by this measure, you know, roughly half of what Donald Trump did and behind everybody else. And there are two other measures I pulled out after looking at some of the things from last night. One was the percentage of the conversation on Twitter. So this was measuring who's talking about Scott Walker, I guess positively or negatively, and he again is in the eighth spot with about 6% of the tweets mentioning one of the candidates, whereas Donald Trump, as you might expect, was at the top. Again, Marco Rubio and Chris Christie were below Scott Walker. And finally, this was another kind of fun way to look at it, was just how many people grew Twitter followers during the debate, and Scott Walker fared a little better there, so he added about 6,000 followers. Ben Carson was way at the top with 24,000, so people may not have known much about him before the debate.
You know, what was amazing is Scott Walker loves to talk, but he never made it to the bell on any question that he was asked. So he didn't use the time. Everybody else used their time and then went over. He never did that, and it was just surprising because I think he had certain points he was going to make. He made them, and then he stopped. And to many people, I think it was pretty noticeable that was the plan.
Right, I guess the word for economical presentation. So let's ask Mary first and then Patrick. What was your general take on Scott Walker and how he did?
Yeah, I agree with Dan on that. He talked about wanting to relax before the debate, and maybe he relaxed a little too much. He did really fade into the background. I don't think it was about 15 minutes before he uttered a word, and when he did, it was maybe less than 40 seconds. And I think in the first half hour, he spoke for about 40 seconds total.
Hour is a minute 54.
Right.
So, but
less,
you know,
than 6 minutes the whole time.
But it's not just about the quantity. He didn't have much to say that was memorable. He had the one line about Hillary Clinton and her emails that ended up getting some attention. But beyond that, he didn't have much to say that was memorable. It was, in general, I think, a pretty forgettable performance. He didn't say anything that we remembered in a bad way or in a good way.
That said, he's been polling well, so I think their strategy was don't come off as a jerk don't screw up, and I guess in that way he succeeded.
Yeah, let's go to Patrick and Madison to get his take. Now, the format, of course, plays a role in this because you can't, if you're constantly jumping in, you look like you're butting in and you're having a problem. But how did you think he did, Patrick, in terms of sort of the substance when he did get a chance to answer questions?
Well, I mean, he answered the questions that were put to him, and he did it in a very tight way. I agree that he got overshadowed during much of the debate. And the other thing that I think is interesting, you know, on that list of who spoke most and least, Walker was 9th out of 10. I was surprised to see Rand Paul spoke a minute less than him, but you know, Rand Paul really made an impression, mostly because he was being combative and calling himself a different kind of Republican and sort of taking on Chris Christie and Donald Trump. Walker didn't leave those kinds of impressions. He did, he did talk about issues, but he easily faded in the background.
But I disagree with Patrick on one point. He didn't answer some of the questions. Megyn Kelly's question about abortion and why he believes that there shouldn't be an exception for the life of the mother, he didn't address that question, and she didn't follow up on that. And I would actually like to hear the answer to that question. And then there was the question about the other country. What was the other countries
in the Middle East?
Estonia?
Yeah, and he again didn't come up with a country in response to the question. He was prepared for the question about the economy and why he didn't create a $250,000 jobs, but on those other ones, I think he had his points, he made his points, and even the point about Hillary Clinton was not in direct response to the question that was asked.
Right. Let's show that one now, because we've got that one on tape. That was probably his sort of most memorable zinger in the debate, and clearly one he sort of had in his back pocket going forward.
Mm-hmm. What would you do if Russian President Vladimir Putin started a campaign to destabilize NATO allies, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, mirroring the actions Putin took at the early days of Ukraine?
Well, first off, for the cyber attack with Russia the other day, it's sad to think right now, but probably the Russian and Chinese government know more about Hillary Clinton's email server than do the members of the United States Congress.
So that one struck me anyways like a case where he's got the talking points in his head, and he sort of went back to grab that one and pull it in, and he came off a little less conversational, maybe a little less authentic than some of the others who might have had similar talking points, but they seemed to be presented in a more natural way.
I think he went to that one. He obviously had it in the hopper, but I think it stressed his message that he was going after Hillary Clinton. He wasn't going to get sucked into the fray of fighting with Donald Trump or fighting with Chris Christie, but he was going to focus on the Dems. So I think that's why he pulled it out.
But it's an easy thing to, she's not there, so you can beat up on her. And you know, eventually he's going to have to make the case as to why he is the candidate who should be elected as opposed to the other 9 people on the stage or Carly Fiorina or whoever else might end up being there.
Scripted. We're talking a lot, of course, about how the style of it and how it came off. Was there anything that we heard substantive in terms of policy points or things? I know there was the bit about, you know, the NATO countries and Russia and things. Is there anything, you know, Patrick, did you catch anything when you were writing the story that you felt like here's actual news from the governor that helps clarify his position on anything?
No, I don't think that he said anything new that he hasn't said before. You know, if you've been following him, if you've been watching his stump speeches, everything he said was in line with those. I don't think there was a single, point that he made that he hasn't made in the past. And that was by design. He's trying to introduce himself to voters who don't know him as well and deliver that message. He's very disciplined, and, he tried to get his points across.
There were a few things he didn't mention that I was expecting, because he mentions them everywhere. There was no reference to Kohl's cash. No Kohl's cash anywhere. Eagle Scout? Was he an Eagle Scout in there? I don't think so.
No, and
he was in the preacher's sense son. That he finished on time.
He was on time, and preacher's kid. You heard no reference to that. You did hear a reference to David Clark, which I haven't heard too much before.
And Harley.
The Harley's there, and he mentions the Harleys before. And David Clark, I understand, was actually in the audience. Oh. So that was somewhat new. We're talking about style. The things that I think were rewarded last night was those who were spontaneous or appeared to be spontaneous with some of their answers, who gave detailed responses, and people who had a sense of gravitas. And he didn't have those things. But that doesn't mean that he can't in future debates. I think they'll take this, count this as a win because he made no major mistakes and move on from here?
Well, I asked this of Craig Gilbert earlier because the governor is an experienced hand at these at politics, and he's going to learn from this experience and how it came out. What's his takeaway in terms of the next debate in a month or so? Patrick, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, he's got to get more screen time. He's got to be more engaged, I think, for future debates. That's the main thing I would say. He's got to. It's okay to go through one where you kind of get overshadowed. He can't have that happen for the next two debates.
So can he learn to be spontaneous? gravitas is something that's hard to measure. But, you know, someone like Kasich came across extremely well. Like, he knew what he was talking about, engaged on the issues, took a couple issues, turned them sideways, and responded his own way. And I thought Rubio came across as someone who knew what he was talking about and then was very much in control of the situation, even though all of them have talking points and they're running through talking points in their heads. Some of them, you know, it doesn't appear like they've memorized a script and that they're presenting it to the audience.
Before we go on to talk about more of the rest of the candidates, we're going to show one more clip. This is one of the questions where the candidates were all asked about God and whether God had spoken to them individually on the campaign.
I'm certainly an imperfect man, and it's only by the blood of Jesus Christ that I've been redeemed from my sins. So I know that God doesn't call me to do a specific thing. God hasn't given me a list, the Ten Commandments, if you will, of things to act on the first day. What God calls us to do is follow His will. And ultimately, that's what I'm going to try and do. And I hope people have seen in my state, even in the big challenges I took on when I had over 100,000 protesters in and around our Capitol trying to do what I thought was the right thing, it wasn't just how I took on those political battles. It was ultimately how I acted, not responding in kind, not lashing out, but just being decent going forward and living my life in a way that would be a testimony to him and his faith, and our faith.
All right, let's just talk briefly on that clip and specifically turn it toward the early primary states in terms of who the governor's appealing to and something like that. And how do you think he played there? Not, we're sort of talking like to the general audience, but did his remarks play better in New Hampshire or Iowa, say, than maybe
that was clearly directed to evangelicals in Iowa because the language about the blood of the Christ and so forth, he was using evangelical language that would communicate to them. He didn't go as far as he has in other contexts, though, in talking about God speaking directly to him. He has said in the past that God communicated directly to him to get married to Jeanette, to drop out of the 2006 gubernatorial race. He was much more generic here, but I think once you get a little too specific there, it starts to scare some people off. So he didn't go as far as he's gone in the past in talking about that.
Okay. It seemed like a good answer for, I mean, that's obviously the crowd he's trying to reach, and I think it would appeal to evangelicals, and it didn't seem like God wants me to be president, which is getting into scary territory.
But, although, he has sort of hinted that he thinks things have all fallen together in something of a divine way, but then you also run into the problem that Huckabee's also saying very similar language, and you have to wonder then if God is actually promoting two candidates instead of one.
God is calling for a ticket.
Yeah. All right, let's look at some of the bigger picture, the other candidates, the nine others on the stage. I think the biggest news of it probably is in the first 2 minutes when everybody had to raise their hand to say, are you committed to supporting whoever comes from this batch, and Donald Trump didn't. Does that cause problems for Donald Trump among Republicans to say, like, this, he's not going to stick with the party, he might go off by himself?
You know, that was a fun debate to watch. I feel like all the other Wisconsin debates I've been covering were so boring in comparison.
We'll try to get 17 candidates for the next gubernatorial
but
race.
But the funny thing is that I feel like every time Trump has a Trump moment, whether it's McCain or Latinos and criticizing immigrants, people will think, like, this is it. This has harpooned his campaign. And the Trump base, the supporters and people who love Trump are like, yay, Trump. And I don't think his performance last night harpooned himself with his supporters.
I think actually, I was wondering if he wrote the first question because it shifts the entire discussion. Is this debate about
Donald
the 10
Trump.
Candidates or Donald Trump? Boom, immediately it's all about Donald Trump, and he gets 3 minutes of time just to talk about, will he support the other candidates or not? It became Donald Trump's debate from the beginning.
Someone said it was Donald Trump with 9 supporting actors.
Well, Patrick, do you think Donald Trump has a ceiling here, though? I mean, he's leading among this massive group Is he going to appeal enough to the, you know, the broad group of Republican voters that he can be a, you know, a force and, you know, through the early primaries and beyond?
Well, he's already a force. He does have a ceiling. I mean, that's Trump's problem, is that he doesn't have a lot of room to grow. He's in the 20s, which in a field of 17 puts you at the front of the pack. You know, I think it is, you know, a lot of the critics and observers have been saying it's very difficult to see any path where he gets the nomination. But in the meantime, he's sitting in a good place. I don't think he did anything last night that's going to really diminish his standing in a significant way, because he does have that core base of people who are going to stick by him. I think a lot of establishment Republicans were expecting this debate to be the point at which Trump finally did something and his numbers started to crater, but I don't think that happened last night.
You know, the main event is still not for months and months, so if you're a Republican, you can play around. If a pollster calls you and says, who do you support, why not say Donald Trump? It doesn't really, I mean, there's no problem with saying you like him or you support him. But when you get closer and closer to election, I think that's when you'll start seeing people make divisions and decisions on whether they like him as opposed to Jeb Bush or Marco Rubio or Scott Walker.
All right, well, let's go around the horn here and just set aside Scott Walker for a minute because we spent so much time on him already. But of the other 9 candidates, or if you tuned into the earlier debate, feel free to go, you know, 11 to 17. Mm-hmm. Who was the biggest winner in your mind, or did the most to advance their candidacy, and who struggled the most?
There were a few. In the happy hour debate, it seemed like a lot of them struggled, except for really Carly Fiorina came out shining out of that one, and that seemed to be, I don't know that I would call her like the winner of that debate, but she certainly seemed to fare very well, get a lot of attention, get a lot of praise. In the main debate, you know, Walker didn't screw up. He didn't he didn't make a terrible impression, but he was kind of a non-presence.
Yeah.
And I thought Kasich, Kasich really came off as very, he came off as very impressive. I thought Marco Rubio exceeded my expectations. He wasn't guzzling water. He didn't look like he was under stress. He had some really good comments.
So, I ended up walking away thinking, I like Kasich. He's a good guy, and mm-hmm. I liked him. And with Rubio, I was impressed with how he did. You know, Chris Christie seemed comfortable with his position and so forth. But I think those two stood out to me. I thought Jeb Bush didn't look terrible. I thought he looked okay. I liked his answer on whether he's like or dislike his brother and his father. But he stumbled pretty badly, I think, on his closing statement.
Yeah. Patrick, what was your sense of who did sort of help themselves the most and help themselves the least?
Well, one surprise for me was that Ted Cruz was really not much of a factor in this debate. He kind of faded into the background like Walker did. You know, he is someone who I thought might go on the attack more, sort of the role that Rand Paul played. He's a trained debater. Everybody had talked about how he could really perform well in a situation like this, and he didn't see it. Ben Carson, he kind of faded to the background for the first half of the debate and kind of came into his own in the second. You saw all the Twitter followers he got. I think he really resonates with a lot of people in the base.
All right. Before we close, I was reading through our comments on the website and other places. I got some reader thoughts of sort of their take on the debate. And I just want to throw those out there and see what we can all react to them. We mentioned Rubio recently. Here's one from Partner 145, who said Rubio will be the next president or vice president of this country. Did he do that well here? What was your sense of Rubio specifically?
I mean, the problem with Kasich is he looks like every other Republican who's run for president over the last 20 years, and Marco Rubio, you know, is young. He's was pretty dynamic yesterday. I think it would be a very different message if he is the nominee for the Republicans. It would be a statement, particularly with Hispanics, because they've done very badly, and polls so far have shown Hillary has like a 3-1 advantage over most of the Republicans in the Hispanic community. You know, right now he's got a campaign that's built to last, and he'll be in there toward the end. So I think he's someone to watch.
All right, this was a comment from Vobox3343, and I have no idea what some of these handles mean, but it said, it sounded like the governor was running for class president. The answer to every question can't be, quote, I won an election 3 times. And the attacks on Hillary, you can do that once you've gotten the nomination. He was too scripted, and it showed. He sounded more like a Sarah Palin. He's not even mentioned in social media sites. Bad news for the governor. So, of course, there's the debate, and then there's the all the discussion about the debate and how that plays a role too. You know, is that a what was your take, Patrick, on that reader's comment in terms of just did he come off as too, you know, unauthentic?
Well, I do think that he came across as a little scripted in the debate. But the other thing, Walker doesn't seem to be being mentioned a lot today in all this aftermath. Obviously, we've got a focus on him here. But, you know, he's maybe not getting that much attention, but I don't know that that hurts him really in the long game. He wanted to not make a big mistake, not screw up. And, you know, when two more debates are under his belt, are people going to be talking about this one so much? Not really. So I don't know.
The question coming out of this is, will he remain in the polls as one of the top tier candidates? And he's hoping coming out of this that he's still among the top four. That's the thing to watch in the next 2 weeks, whether these national polls and the Iowa polls put him near the top still, despite how he did at the debate.
And that's the interesting dynamic of if somebody's going to rise and somebody's going to fall from this, and where does one support? Does it come out of Walker's support, or does Rand Paul rise or fall, and that support goes to Christie or something like that?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Rand Paul had some good zingers, but will him kind of coming off as, I mean, he was a bit smug, probably, and some people thought he was probably a bit of a jerk, so that might hurt him. But then there are supporters who just seem to love Rand Paul and be pretty, you know, and they're going to love him forever.
You mentioned Carly Fiorina. If she emerges from that second tier up into the group of 10.
I think she will.
And where does she get her support? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's an interesting question as well. And I think she will too.
Let's get one more reader comment. This is from Good Stewart, who said, "This debate was really about watching Trump implode. Everyone can hate on Walker, but if someone is going to take the reins from Obama and completely take a 180, it would be him. Unfortunately, I don't think he will have the popularity to pull it off." So here's someone saying he thought Trump imploded. We had sort of a different assessment here.
I think he will implode at some point, but I don't think it was last night. I don't know.
I think he's a Rorschach test. If you don't like him, you could have found stuff in there that you really disliked. If you like him and you think he's, you know, a little bit interesting, creative, and different from the other ones, you see stuff in the performance that you would like.
Oh, yeah. Patrick, let me ask you this one. On Trump, was there a particular, there were the comments about Rosie O'Donnell and women, and he kind of was, you know, pretty, you know, flip about that response. But was there any that responses that really stood out one way or the other for you from Donald Trump?
Well, I think that's the one that probably has the potential to hurt him the most. He didn't do anything to make inroads with women voters there, and he tried to make a joke of it about what he was asked about calling women fat pigs, saying only Rosie O'Donnell, and Megyn Kelly said, "Well, it's more than just her that you've said that about." And he had to quickly concede that that was the case, and then he said, "I don't have time for total political correctness," which I think that's a message that notion on its own is something that Republicans in general like, but. When it comes to sort of this flip treatment of women, it turns off a lot of voters.
I think many of his answers were problematic. He goes after Megyn Kelly for the questions she asked him, and he goes after the panel and says they were tougher on me than they were on some of the other people, and then he rips on reporters, even though he's someone who's used reporters over the years to his advantage. And the Washington class is all stupid. I mean, it's an overly simplistic view, but it resonates with some people.
All right, so I think we'll probably leave it there. There will be another debate in about a month, and then a few months down the line, we have a debate here in Wisconsin, presumably in Milwaukee, and we'll probably have a lot more to talk about as we go.
I hope ours is as much fun.
We may have to be in the Bradley Center if we're at the Quicken Loans.
Maybe if
over
we
there.
Get to ask the questions.
Yeah. We'll have this debate right here.
There we go.
In a slightly bigger studio. All right, well, thanks everybody for joining us. We'll be back next Thursday at the regular time at noon for the latest of what's happening in Wisconsin politics.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.